He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good morning to our listeners for this edition of Car Keys with Mike, Jay, and Robin. We are in the middle of the end of a nice snowstorm in our northwest Connecticut listing area, which has layered a coat of very nice snow of my measuring between 5 and 6 inches where I am as I record for this show for you guys. And it brings up a couple of points about winter and things that go on with winter events like snowstorms and very cold temperatures. We've also got cold temperatures as we record this show. It was 11 in my recording center this morning, and it's maybe going down to zero before we get to Wednesday, which is a couple of days after this show was recorded. Batteries are the first topic I want to bring up. I have a couple of cars with batteries that are between 8 and 10 years old and are still functioning if I treat them correctly. However, when the temperatures go down, an old battery may be already nearing the end of its life. And I know that one of my two batteries is definitely near the end of its life, because if I leave the parking lights on or I leave the radio on in the car for 5 minutes or more or less, it will run that battery down, even if I've been driving it for a half an hour or so, down to the point where when I get in to start the car won't crank because the battery's too low. That is probably below 11 volts, no, 10 volts of charge. cold weather can do it also. We've talked about cold weather with e-cars, electric car batteries, for a long time. But this is a 12-volt battery discussion, because you may well have found, if you were in an inclement weather with extra cold temperatures, that you got in your car in the morning and the battery would either crank really slowly and not quickly enough to start, or not at all, probably because the battery is old and should be replaced. I have what we call jump packs, which are very portable battery jump chargers. They're not like the big ones you buy in a commercial auto parts store, which look like a small suitcase, weigh quite a bit of pounds because of the size and the heaviness of the battery, and are used by car repair centers and dealerships to start cars in their lots where they're going around starting cars in 400-car lots that probably need some charging or jumping started. we have not talked about old batteries in the show too much before, but if your battery's getting old and you're going to be in continuous cold weather, you may well find you need to replace your battery. Jay, do you have any comments?
Yeah, I haven't started my Volkswagen this morning yet, and I was just reflecting on that a few days ago. The battery in that car is probably 10 years old, because the car was built, I think, in late 2014. I've owned it since 2016, and I certainly have never changed the battery on the car. And
don't probably park your car and leave your things on, your lights or radio on, without the engine running, which would tell you if you did do that and you found that it wouldn't start after 20 minutes or so. Your battery was probably in need of thinking about being replaced. But, you know, these old batteries can go a long time. If I do not do anything about leaving the radio on with the ignition on after I get out of the car, turning the engine off, that is, but still leaving the ignition on, or the lights on, headlights even, I have been running this jump pack on my battery as a booster for probably over a year now, and I have yet to decide to actually go replace the battery. So that's how stubborn and cheap I might be.
Yeah, I know. You could also just learn to just shut the lights off.
And that's why I've been able to get so long without having to use the jump pad too much. I have yet to go out on this particularly very cold recording morning to see whether the car will start without any jump pack requirement or not. I have not run the headlights, blah, blah, blah. Next thing about storms. We have 5 to 6 inches. It's layering not only the ground and the tree limbs and the roads, but it's layering the tops of your cars. And there's a state law in Connecticut, I believe, in New York, I believe, in which you are supposed to remove the snow from the roof of your car as well as the windows and, of course, the side so you can get in the car, in and out of the car. The reason being that if snow stays on the top of a car and is too wet or is heavy to blow off when you go 50 or 60 miles down the road, like it will probably this morning because the snow is dry, it will. What happens is it warms up underneath when you have heat on in the car, and then it freezes back on, and it becomes more like ice blocks. And those are the things that are very dangerous when you are following cars with roof with snow on their roofs, and it's fairly thick-looking if you're visually watching for it, and it might just blow off, and it could very well land either on the hood of your car or on the windshield because they tend to fly quite far when they're going 60 or 70 miles an hour on interstate types of roads, and they land on your car. And if they hit a windshield, it could well crack it. It might do worse. So it's very hard to get on the tops of roofs and clean off the roofs of these SUV type of vehicles, sedans, which are diminishing in numbers, as we have said on this show, are lower and much more easily reached to do that with a snow brush. But the SUVs, especially Suburbans and Explorers and Stellantis' Jeeps and anything, vans particularly, never get cleaned off, I seem to see, because they're even taller than the aforementioned SUVs. It is very hard, and if they are already ice-bound, a snow brush is not going to remove them. And what happens is when you're driving the car, your interior warms up and the warmth goes through the roof and starts loosening up that ice bond that the snow chunks might have on your roof, and that's when they come off in high-speed driving. Jay, I think you've seen it. I have seen it also.
Yeah, I've also.
It's quite frightening if you're really close. If you're seeing it on the other lane and all that, you may or may not even see what might happen. But it is something that needs more attention, I think, than is given by most drivers cleaning their cars off of snow after snowstorms.
I remember a few years ago, many years ago, I had a minivan. It was a long time ago because it was before I turned 40, and I had sworn I would never turn 40 in a minivan. And I
didn't. You and many other people.
And now I, you know.
You have a van now.
Are great vehicles. But anyway, and I remember hitting the brakes and the whole pack of ice, as you mentioned.
Oh, very good point for listeners.
It came down and came right down the windshield and just ripped off both my wipers right off the windshield.
Good point. I'm glad you addended my discussion about it. Yes, snow can come forward, people, and do exactly what Jay has just suggested might happen. Not only that, but if you're braking a car, which is what you're probably doing when this happens, and it is a big chunk to slow down, you will be briefly blinded, and you could have more happen than just seeing a plate of ice come down over your windshield. Especially if you haven't really come to a stop yet and you may be in a parking lot or whatever else. So I think it deserves more attention than we give it. So that's our sort of a safety tip for us on this show. In the meantime, we did have this storm. The plows were out overnight. I could hear them from my window. And I must say, whatever they put on the roads, they were down to wet pavement by the time I got out to snow blow a driveway this morning with a snowblower. And I'm sure I haven't been on the state highways as of this recording, so I don't know what their condition is, but I'm sure they're in pretty much perfect condition.
They are. I'm looking outside my window right now.
Yeah, I drove on them this morning. They're good.
Black ice hit some. Let me tell you about black ice. Before this snowstorm hit, there was about 15 hours of light rain around our northwest corner listing area, and at nighttime, apparently, some towns had not gotten their salt trucks and sand trucks out, and a friend of mine with whom I had dinner on a particular night, this weather pattern was going on, went home, and he went to, the roads looked perfectly black and wet to him, and he went to turn his driveway, and he put his brakes on, and he slid with his anti-lock braking working full blast right by his driveway. He had to back up and go in. If he had been at a corner before he'd gotten to this part where he was slowing down, he could have been in big trouble too. So you've got to watch out when you see dark, wet roads and the temperature is at or below freezing, because black ice, where we have recently talked on a couple other shows, is a very dangerous condition that can end you up in the body shop of your nearest auto body place very quickly.
Well, and it's sometimes hard to tell if the roads are...
Hard to tell whether they are wet and ice,
yeah,
or just wet, or just dry.
I mean, and I've said it before, I say it every year on this show, is that I sometimes, if in doubt, I just get out of the car and, you know, walk on the road and see if it's
wet. I've never seen you do it, but that's a good idea.
So what else is new, Robin? Have you seen the pictures of the new Tesla Y? What do you think of that
face? I've read about it. I think I saw a picture of it. I think it looked pretty neat. It's sort of like an evolution of the Prius in design, but it's
You're not
Prius.
Being kind to the Prius, which
tell us what any good technical stuff, because the irony of this is that here we are. We had Teslas in the U.S. before they went anywhere else. And the new remodeled Tesla Y has been remodeled for the European market first.
China, too.
China also.
Yeah.
So well, what are we missing, Jay?
Not much. I think there's not much to that facelift other than basically what it is a new fascia and a new lights in the back.
I thought the fascia looked pretty good.
Yeah, it looks like a Cybertruck now. It looked like a Mickey Mouse smiling.
Oh, speaking of Cybertrucks, listeners, if anybody is listening that has a Cybertruck, they are going down in value, apparently enough so that I read it. I saw a headline, and I didn't get to the article in my email, that Tesla is starting to discount Cybertrucks. So the writing is on the wall about the success or lack thereof of continued Cybertruck sales being anything like continued Jeep sales or continued SUV sales that are more practical. It hit me like a brick, actually, because I've been sort of, Jay, you know, we've talked about the Cybertruck. I don't think either of us are a real fan of its looks. I'm sure it drives like a Tesla. And Motor Trend actually gave it sort of an interestingly practical, positive review as far as a truck utility factor of the truck was concerned. But it's so weird. I'm sure it's just a fad for some people, and they just had to have it. But I don't think they can look to be making much money if they're going to resell it.
So
whether it'll survive a redo and or a second generation, you know, Elon is a very mercurial person, and I don't know. He has a fairly short fuse, and if he can't make the Cybertruck sell in numbers that is going to make it practical for him to build them, I don't know whether it has a long shelf life as a production car or vehicle or not.
I think it really doesn't matter. As I've said before,
doesn't matter.
When it just came out, I think the technological advances in the Cybertruck are more important than the Cybertruck itself. There's a lot of technology that's going to trickle down to other Tesla models. Whether stainless steel body actually makes it, becomes something that is used across the board, I don't know. But there's also the wireless steering, you know, the fly-by-wire steering, fly-by-wire brakes. All that technology is going to trickle down to the rest of the lineup. And that's what's interesting.
Okay, wireless, let's talk about wireless.
The truck itself is a little like politics. I have to shut it out of my life right now.
Well, I think wireless stuff is already in some other vehicles as well. I am very concerned about what happens if you have electrical failure in the electrical system of a car and you're going along at 65 miles an hour. What is the backup for wireless steering, and what is the backup for wireless brakes?
Back then I read the article on the Cybertruck, and there are multiple redundancies. It is basically impossible to lose your brakes or your steering in a Cybertruck.
You've got more.
That's a good thing.
You've got more redundancies there than you do in a regular automobile with everything hooked up.
Exactly. Yeah.
I haven't read about the redundancies.
That is the good part about that whole thing. But anyway, so moving on from the Cybertruck a little
bit.
You know, and one more thing about Tesla. I think it's still interesting that their first model, the Tesla S, is still the one that hasn't gotten facelifted. And, it's been improved from a powertrain and batteries standpoint.
It may be the best value in the Tesla lineup as far as quantity for dollar.
Yes, and it also, I think it's still the best-looking one.
I think it's a great-looking vehicle.
And it is aging very, very well.
I agree.
From looks standpoint. But
we have an owner in our listing area that still has her Model
Fair.
S that she bought the first year.
Yeah, I remember that.
She won't buy a new one, not because she wouldn't, but because they don't make the color, even at an optional price, that she has on hers. She doesn't like that. That's her reasoning for not replacing it. And she has had a couple of motors replaced. Everything has apparently been done under warranty. And, of course, she is still under the Tesla free charging, lifetime free charging policy, which she got and many of the first owners got. I don't know how many years that was out there. But she doesn't have to pay for any charging in a Tesla charger.
So,
Jay, did you have something about Stellantis you wanted me to know about that I didn't? Jeep, the Cherokee is about to show up in a new line of some upgraded and changed Jeeps, besides the Jeep E Grand Cherokee, which is fully electric, which is apparently in production and may or may not be at dealers yet. But the Cherokee is going to be a little bit longer, a little bit wider and probably more expensive than the last generation, which they stopped in 2000. The production stopped in 2023, but there were 2024 models titled as 2020. There was production of 23s. It was titled as 24s for a while, and I saw a few existing on dealers' lots before they all got sold out. But they're going to have, finally, they should have had this in. We talked about this in a recent show. That was a mistake, in my opinion. I think JU agreed for them to have dumped that particular model if they were going to stop producing a Jeep. The Renegade or the Compass would have been a much better one to have dumped, in my view. The Renegade is gone. It was built in Italy and is a small box. I suspect it is very good off-road in approach and departure angles because of its short overhang over its rear axles and front axles. And I don't know how many might still be around and be used in off-roading stuff because it looked to me like it was going to be actually a very practical off-road because of its small size. It was very agile. I don't know whether it came in an off-road edition with skid plates and that, but I felt it would have been a very good one for, let's say, real estate because it was smaller than these big, wider SUVs are at the Jeep and the Broncos and the like for going down through woods and following narrower trails than some of these wider SUV variants have grown into, therefore by scratching the sides of the doors or that, and this is where the original Jeep,
World War II Jeeps
could get through without, scathing their sides.
Hey, so I think the problems with Stellantis and Chrysler are long in the making, and I think they were smoking something very powerful when they were riding a high and sales were good and the world seemed wonderful. And I think this has been, their decline, I think could have been seen a long time ago.
Well, I don't know about that because I think the base, the Grand Cherokee. You brought this up in a recent show. The
it's one
Jeeps
model.
Are very good.
Yes, it's
vehicles.
A good-looking SUV. It's a great vehicle. I think it's well built. It's got smart powertrains. But that's one vehicle in the lineup.
Well,
name me another.
You're talking about the Wrangler. Which model
well,
were you talking
Wrangler
about with that last comment?
For everything you've just said about going down in the trees and down little paths, the Wrangler is so big and so bloated now that
So is the Bronco. But what you usually see is four-door Wranglers and four-door Broncos, which obviously are not going off-road at the same level that the two-door vehicles
I just think you know the Chrysler Group and now Stellantis, whatever you want to call it, Fiat Chrysler before that, they've diluted each one of the brands, and now they have these Ram trucks, but they really don't have all that much of a lineup. They really have one van and one truck.
Well, and then they've
got the
Grand Cherokee,
that's hardly a lineup, in my opinion. And then in the Chrysler Group, you know, I don't think there's a Chrysler car left, or is there?
Well,
who
there's
knows?
Something. Isn't that? I don't know. The Challengers aren't under the Chrysler badge, are they? They're Dodge.
They're Dodge, so but Dodge used to be a whole lineup. Now you have the Challenger and the Charger. Oh, and in the minivan? No, that's right. Oh no, that's the Chrysler Pacifica. They finally stopped production of the old van. They have no idea what they're doing. Okay?
I agree with you there. I agree with you there. They have no idea. They seem to have no idea what they're doing in the marketing department of the vehicle you just mentioned. But they're going to heal themselves because they've got too much to lose if they don't.
You know, all good things come to an end.
Right.
This is my very positive attitude for 2025, by the way.
I've seen it.
But another company and brand that we haven't seen and won't see for a while is, again, and we've talked about it a little bit, is BYD,
right.
A Chinese company, Build Your Dream. I just stumbled upon a review of their pickup truck, which is not going to be sold in the U.S., not anytime soon, but it is being sold in Mexico, and that is not too far from here. And the BYD is an electric vehicle manufacturer, and they do have a presence in the U.S. We've mentioned that. The company has over 1,000 employees. They sell commercial vehicles. They sell buses. They manufacture and sell buses. So they have a presence here already. I don't think we're going to see the consumer products anytime soon, but that BYD pickup truck is actually one of those smart vehicles that has a gasoline engine, but it's not a hybrid in the conventional sense. And I forget how we label that the distinction, but
well,
basically it's a
generator.
It's a small engine. It's a range extender. So that's
what's going to be in the Scout, too.
Scout. Great. That is smart, and that's the one powertrain architecture that is very easy to do. With a pickup truck, with a vehicle that's built on a frame, on a classic frame, that's not a unibody. And it can almost be an afterthought. I mean, the chassis can exist, and they can go out and do that in almost in retrofit. So anyway, that truck was getting great reviews, and it was not very detailed, but it's a threat. I mean, if that vehicle is going to be, you know, just south of the border, I think at some point it may find a way here. It's not going to be in the next...
Somebody will figure a way to import it and get it in here, I'm sure. Maybe not numerically in great numbers, but the head of Ford, I think I mentioned on a recent show, had managed to get a BYD vehicle into Dearborn, and he drove it around, and he was quite smitten with it. So there's no question that if BYD were to be able to make inroads here, that the... electric car industry in the U.S. and maybe even in Europe would be probably in a very fearful state because of the pricing, unless tariffs were. This tariff thing is just an elephant in a room waiting to explode if they try to bring Chinese vehicles into this country, because they are so much less expensive than the equal. U.S. alternative or European alternative, that they would, you know, we like to buy as cheap a car as we can if we like what we see, and it's as good as it has to be to satisfy our demands of putting out money for a new type of vehicle or a new brand of vehicle that might hit the shores here.
So I think we're probably slowly running out of time. There are a couple of things I wanted to talk about.
Yes, you did. We missed them last time, so let's
get
on.
Yeah, well, there's always next time. And one of them is the car buying websites and how to navigate them and which ones are good and not. And maybe we can talk about that in the next show.
What's the name of it?
Well, it's all, I was talking about speaking of all of them, you know, cars, car dealers.
Oh, okay. Auto
car
Trader?
Backs, and I'm not even talking about the car companies selling cars like Carvana or Vroom, but just the informational websites. And they all work fairly well, but they all have some frustrating aspects to them. So we can talk about them a little more in detail.
I would like to discuss add the warranty discussion on those, those cars.
So I wanted to have that discussion, too, and maybe, again, we can do that next week.
Okay.
The extended warranties and the difference between extended warranties, the factory warranties,
and state-required warranties, which are nothing. Okay. Any more safety things, Jay?
Well, I think you covered it up. You covered it pretty well early in the show.
Well,
that's about
covered it
for
the
today.
Snowstorm weather and that kind of thing. Wipers, windshield wipers.
Fluid.
Wiper fluid.
That's right. That's right.
Your wiper fluid vessel should be full, and it should be full of minimum 20 to 25 degrees below zero. The nozzles can still freeze up, and if you have nozzles on the hoods of your car and you're cleaning off your car in snowstorms, be sure the nozzles are exposed. They tend to be black, I think, no matter what the color of the paint of the car is. I figured that out this morning as I watched the sun hit the hood of one of my vehicles. I cleaned the nozzles off of it, and I figured the sun would warm the black, and if they were frozen inside, they would thaw. The fluid would thaw as soon as it felt the warmth of the sun.
And that's the last word on that for today, folks.
Okay, until next time, we are Jay, Mike, and Robin for Car Keys.
Have a good week, folks.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.